Okay, so now we have Nick Farr.
Hello.
Who looks like Fidel Castro.
Well, I can put on the hat again if you'd like. See, I'll just put it on right now. Okay.
So, are you a
communist? In este momento.
Are you a communist supervisor? Yeah?
I would say I'm not.
You're not in the Americas. So you can't speak freely here.
Hmm? No, I'm definitely not a communist supervisor.
Why not?
Because I think the...
Don't you like people?
I love people. And I think communist regimes don't like people. No, I think all the evidence, just look at the history of Germany and all the people fleeing the East. If the East loved people, why did everybody want to leave?
I see what you did there. Okay, back to topic. Well, okay, we want to ask you about your years in school.
In elementary, high school,
just college. The whole career.
Whole career?
Yeah.
Well, I had a great time. You know, by the time I got to high school, this is a funny story. There was the room to the newspaper, and I was really involved as editor of my high school newspaper in my senior year, and they gave me a key to the office, which I found out later was actually a master key to the school. And I never abused it. You know,
say the same thing.
I actually never did. The funny thing was one of my teachers had lost their keys and was trying to open their door, and so I say, oh, you know, hey, Mrs. So-and-so, I can open that for you. And then I open her classroom door, and she says, thanks. And I do this maybe 10 or 15 times. Nobody pays any attention. And then one teacher that didn't like me, they lost their keys, and I opened their classroom door, and then the school found out. No, then the school found out I had a master key, and they're like, okay, we knew it was a master key. We didn't think you would find out, so you have to give the key back now. And so I gave the key. They changed the lock to the door.
Similar stuff at our school, only that the people would just borrow the key and then make copies of it. And so after a while, in every class, there was, maybe not in every class, but in every, like, how do you say that, like, a level?
Oh, every grade.
Yeah, in every grade there was a person having a master key. But it could be the quiet, nerdy ones, who never got any attention from the teachers.
Today, thanks to hackerspaces and kids hanging out in hackerspaces, they know how to make their own keys. And if they don't know how to make their own keys, they know how to pick the lock. And they've got lockpick sets.
Oh, you.
But you were a nice student in school, and you did not quite use your privilege.
I was more of the Ferris Bueller types. I hate to say this. Ferris Bueller, it was a movie from the 1980s. Okay. Perhaps the reference is lost, and I apologize for that. But really, in high school, I did a lot of the same things that I do here at the Congress. You know, I want everybody to be happy. And there are times when someone's upset about something, and if I'm in a position to fix whatever they're upset about, I want to do it. That's the thing that I like to do the most.
You fix stuff.
I fix stuff.
And you fix stuff at school.
I did fix stuff at school.
How did it come to? You cannot always have been this way. Social ethics that
I just like doing it. You know, it's not a social ethic. It's not a philosophy. It's just something that I enjoy doing. Some people enjoy playing cards. Some people enjoy riding bikes. I enjoy helping people. I enjoy, you know, and that's the good thing about helping people is that anytime you help somebody without the expectation of a reward, they will do whatever they can to help you. And then the more favors you do for people, the more favors they'll do for you. So those favors that people would like to do for you, you can then pass on to others. The cycle repeats and the world becomes a better place.
So it's not that you demand from the other person that they do a favor to you, but you trust into the general system that favors get rewarded.
Yeah,
so
and it absolutely happens. And that's the thing. People who demand favors are people who you can automatically tell, I think. Anytime somebody
that's
says, okay, now you
thing
owe me.
To do. Like, well, right, I'm a nice guy, please be nice to me.
Well, exactly. And you don't get anything that way. You know, because, I mean, yeah, people will do just the bare minimum, to relieve their debt or their obligation to this person. But if you do things without obligation, you get so much more from everybody. And it's one of those things where people say, oh, Nick Farr did this thing and blah, 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 blah. And the story carries on. So, of course, you know, that obligation where there is no real obligation sort of becomes something for the community. And then everybody in the community, whatever they want to do, you know, they think that, oh, whatever we can do for Nick Farr would be great. And it gets a little embarrassing. And it's a power that, that I'm very afraid of and very leery sometimes. You know, sometimes
great
people could
comes
great responsibility. And, I mean, not saying that, oh, I'm this powerful person or anything. I'm not. I'm just some goofy American who, you know, likes to cheer people up and acts the clown and does all that. But, you know, there are some times when somebody will go out of their way to do something. I say, no. You have a job to do. Don't treat me like anybody special. Don't. You know, think
that... It's a nice narrative. I realized that, like, you know the Open League thingy? Like,
yeah.
there Daniel Domscheit-Berg doesn't want to be the hero, but after WikiLeaks, people, even the hackers, demand that the narrative is continued with another hero. And it's so funny to see journalists tripping over that.
Well, but that's a consistent narrative. Journalists follow very strict patterns. Every story, every the inverted pyramid format, you know, they have their narratives that have a very strict ABCD format or whatever it is.
Oh.
And they're focused on personalities because they're simple. Journalism today is about getting the basic message across as quickly as possible. You know, everything is, even newspapers are following the TV news format because people are so busy with their lives and their families to actually pay attention or delve deep into any kind of narrative. And so they can't make money, they can't sell newspapers unless, you know, with some exceptions, the New York Times is quite possibly an exception. You know, maybe the Wall Street Journal before Murdoch was an exception, but, you know, and they have to find, you know, it's the thing, find the hero, find the name, find the personality that we can build a franchise around.
Yeah, and on this camp, for example, you can't do that because everyone's a hero in their own world.
And that's, well, that's the thing, but you can't write about every, well,
yeah, you can.
I say this, you can't write about everybody, but that's what everybody thinks. I think that if we were a little bit more creative about the way we approach journalism, if we actually searched out the stories, and you're absolutely right, everybody here is a hero. Everybody here has, well, of course, a few exceptions, you know.
Well, sounds a bit too nice.
Yeah, but I think that by and large, people are very, very good and very generous and do whatever they can for people, whatever they can for people.
Would you say that... this whole homo homini homini lupus thing, this one man is a wolf to another man thing, is not true.
Do you think it's wrong?
No, I think it's absolutely true. I mean, look at nature, look at all natural processes, they all function like that. Every living thing on the planet affects every other living thing on the planet. It's impossible for it not to. Everything is connected. And I'm not saying this is a hippity-dippity, woo-woo, fascinating thing. If you actually delve deep into the science of it all, you know, and look at how everything on the planet works. Everything on the planet is absolutely connected. Right now, we're breathing the oxygenated atoms that might have been around during the time of Caesar.
But the wolf thing is about, being not nice. You talked about being nice. So what are you? Is it less human or more human?
Are humans constantly at war with each other by nature, or...
I think that now...
That's
that there's
a common narrative,
But there's an interesting dynamic that humans, by and large... like to be part of a group, that
wolf
humanity
packs.
Humanity is a very tribal species, as I like to say. And of course, what is being part of a tribe? It's being part of a group of people that has a leader. And that's the thing, not, as we know throughout history, most leaders are not benign leaders. You know, leaders have a certain amount of power and they want to keep collecting more and more and more power. And then when they have this power, you know, what do they do with it? Somebody's going to come along and challenge that power. And so all this, the wars,
exactly.
The war.
I don't want power. Please don't follow me. But you can if you want.
Yeah,
exactly. That was the cool thing about this George Orwell novel, 1984, with the system being organized in a way that you have this hero personality at the top, Big Brother, which doesn't really exist, and actually it is keeping one privileged class on top of the other classes and building a system that cannot be changed and that does not have any instabilities by, for example, having a leader that could seize more power than is good for him.
But even then there were flaws in that system. Remember the whole downfall of the Alpha Colony.
In 1984?
No, I'm thinking of Brave New World. Forgive me.
No. But he's like saying, like we talked about the campsite, that for example the fascists or communists or something had some ideologies, and in the end they were working for their own power, but they didn't like openly admit it as openly as it's in 1984, where they actually like just optimized for power.
Exactly, a central force that everybody just believed in and was ever present. And that could always be changed. I mean, the story's been one that's been repeated many, many different times, and that it reflects a fundamental flaw of humanity, and that this tribalism leads to consolidation of power and leaders who then go to war with each other. I don't think humans, as a species, by and large, ever want to go to war with each other, but they have to follow their leaders, and their leaders are the ones that lead them into war.
Do you think the hacker community has any potential to become a war-happy tribe?
No, and I think that's another funny thing, is because one of the things I think that makes hackers unique is that hackers don't blindly follow leaders, by and large.
Or leaders even say that they don't want to be followed.
Well, exactly,
like,
because
example,
leaders know.
Do you know Fefe's blog?
Yeah.
sometimes people write what you're telling there was wrong, and if it is really wrong, if he has erred, he says that, well, okay, thanks for correcting me. But sometimes he also just posts hoax messages and write, well, took you some time to notice it or something, because he doesn't want to be, well, he doesn't even take it himself seriously.
And that's possibly a good thing. Yeah,
we are over time.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, and I actually have to head to my.
Thank you for that.
No, thank you. That was awesome.
Have a nice day.
That was fun. I don't get to do that very often. We didn't talk